He wondered about that. I could have stopped her long before she opted for murder. I could have tried to make her see, make her understand. Tavalera's death is just as much my fault as hers. Joe's reply was filled with disdain. Don't blame the victim for the crime, Keith. Chapter 7 Nagesh Janagar shuffled through the physical exams with the six technicians who had also been at the blast. The hospital in Albuquerque was modern, sparkling with the latest equipment and staffed with energetic, young, competent medics. The seven men were accompanied by a small phalanx of Army military police there to enforce security. As far as the medical staff knew, these men had been out in the open when the hydrogen bomb accidentally was triggered. The government would have preferred to keep the blast a secret, but the star-hot flash and towering mushroom cloud had been clearly visible from Albuquerque. Seismographs around the world recorded the ground tremor. Satellites automatically flashed images of the explosion around the world before security agencies could stop them. In Washington and Atlanta, phalanxes of advisors and spin masters were working on explanations for the news media. The story was too big to suppress. It had to be handled instead. With each medical inspection, each test, Janagar's hopes rose a little higher. No external signs of injury. No bruises or burns anywhere on his body. X-rays and full-body scans revealed no internal injuries either. No radiation damage whatsoever. He told the examiners of his brain tumor, and they pulled him aside from the technicians for special scans of his head. "Are you sure you were diagnosed with a tumor?" asked the puzzled doctor. "We can't find any sign of it." Sitting up on the examination table, Janagar told him to check his medical file. The physician turned to his palm-sized computer and projected its data onto the tiny room's wall screen. "Wow," he exclaimed. "That's a tumor, all right." Janagar peered at his own death. But then the image changed. Same brain, but no tumor. None at all. The physician blinked with disbelief. "I've seen spontaneous remissions, but nothing like this. 6 weeks ago, you were a dying man. Now you're normal, healthy. I don't understand it." Janagar smiled like a little boy receiving a birthday gift. He understood. The Star Voyager. The man, Stoner. A gift from the stars. The doctor insisted that Janagar stay in the hospital for a full battery of tests. Janagar laughed and easily agreed. Then he asked his MP escort for permission to phone his wife and tell her the happy news. Once the clipper ship settled down on its landing jets at the Fa'a Aerospaceport, Stoner climbed into the waiting limousine with Angelique and Archbishop Overmeyer. The Archbishop started to protest, but one look at Stoner's stern, unrelenting expression silenced him. He sat on the rearward-facing seat. Overmeyer and Angelique sat side by side, both of them looking decidedly uncomfortable. Without preamble, Stoner said to the Archbishop, "I can cure you."
"Cure me? What do you mean?"
"You're heading for a stroke that will either incapacitate you or kill you outright. I can clean up your cardiovascular system, get your endocrine balance back where it should be."
"By using nanomachines," Sister Angelique interjected.
"Nano?"
The Archbishop's eyes widened.
"But they're forbidden! Sinful!"
"They can be dangerous in the hands of ruthless men," Stoner admitted easily. "They can be turned into weapons, used to kill people."
"You see?"
"But so can a rock. I could use a rock to crush your skull. Or I could use it to help build a cathedral. It's not the tool that's sinful, it's the sinner using it."
"Sophistry," said Angelique.
But the Archbishop asked,
"Am I really dying?"
"Don't you feel it?" Stoner asked back. Overmeyer touched a finger to his fleshy lips, then replied,
"I know my doctors are always after me to diet and exercise. They want me to lose 50 kilos. That's more than 100 pounds.
"That would only delay the inevitable," Stoner said.
"I tire very easily. I seem to be perspiring all the time."
"You're dying. You don't have long to go."
"God's will, I suppose," the Archbishop said with a sigh. "I will not interfere with the will of my Lord."
Stoner laughed bitterly. The first time a caveman chewed a root to get some relief from pain, he was interfering with God's will. God gave us brains, man. He gave us brains so we could use them. And the devil sends us temptations to drag us down to hell.
Bullshit. Hunching forward, Stoner asked, Why can't you believe that God is offering you a chance to survive?
Through nanotechnology?
Stoner nodded. It's a gift from the stars.
The Archbishop shook his head ponderously. I can't. It would fly in the face of everything I believe, everything I've worked for all my life.
Leaning back in the leather-covered seat, Stoner spread his hands and said, So be it. Angelique looked from Stoner to the Archbishop and back again to Stoner.
So what are you going to do? She asked.
I'll address tomorrow's closing session of the meeting. I have a lot to tell the scientists, a lot to tell you all.
Apologia pro vita sua by Yolanda Vasquez.
It's different up here on the moon. For one thing, I can write this on a real honest-to-God notebook, dictating my thoughts while the computer types them so as I can read them on its screen. I don't have to worry about some government agency reading my files and then swooping down on me for subversive, irreligious thoughts. Everything's lighter. It's not just the lower gravity, it's the attitude of the people here. They talk out loud in public places. They smile and say hello to you on the walkways, even if they don't know you from Adam or Eve. They are free. It's a strange dichotomy. Yes, the people of Selene and the other lunar settlements live underground in tunnels and hollowed-out caverns that have been turned into living and working spaces. Yes, we are all absolutely dependent on the machines that extract oxygen from the rocks for us to breathe, that mine water out of the ice deposits at the poles, that convert sunlight into the electricity that powers our community. But dependent as we are on technology, including nanotechnology, we are socially, individually, politically, as free as the old pioneers who settled the American West a couple of centuries ago. I mean, somebody brought up a set of paintings from back Earthside by some early 20th century artist named Rockwell. The Four Freedoms, they're called. Freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom from want, freedom from fear. It's that last one that gets me. Freedom from fear. All my life on Earth, just about, there was always that nagging fear pecking away at the back of my mind. Don't get them upset with you. Don't make a fuss. Do what you're told, or else you'll get in trouble. Not here. People expect you to speak your mind. People don't mind which church you go to, or if you go to none at all. That's your business, nobody else's. Freedom from want. That's another funny thing. Food's good here. I expected processed algae and maybe gengineered pseudo-meat. But we actually have lots of seafood and shellfish because they produce more protein per kilowatt of energy input than meat animals do. And they have farms underground. Takes a lot of electrical energy to light them adequately. But the electricity comes from solar farms up on the surface. Practically free once the solar cells are working. And Selene has automated rolling factories that chug across the ground, turning lunar silicon into solar cells. Neat. And I'm teaching again. That's the best part. I'm not a withered old hag waiting for her bum heart to give out. Here I'm pretty healthy and certainly more vigorous than I was for my last couple of decades on Earth. Low gravity helps a lot. So do the nanomachines the Starman put into me. To be fair, I can understand why nanotechnology was banned on Earth. 12 billion people includes a lot of sickos and out-and-out nutcases.
Let them get their hands on nanotechnology